Tiger Woods underwent surgery following a dangerous car crash. People are explaining how they get back at rude customers, and the tactics they use are pretty inventive. And we're talking with Eric Gumney about the Netflix series Crime Scene, Vanishing at the Cecil Hotel.
It's February 24th, 2021.
Hey friends, I'm Casey Rackham.
And I'm Zach Stafford. Welcome to BuzzFeed Daily.
Zach, can I tell you about what my anxiety spiral of the day is, and also know that it's the morning, so...
Could you imagine if I said no, Casey? Like, how much you would spiral more? So no, you can and unfold the spiral for me.
Okay, so, you know, when I'm not podcasting, I write for BuzzFeed.com, and once a month, I write up what's coming to Netflix and what's leaving Netflix, and I was watching Netflix's trailer, and there is a new reality TV show called Marriage or Mortgage, and there's a real estate agent and a wedding planner, and they compete to see which couple is going to spend their savings on either a wedding or a mortgage. Zach,
I'm obsessed.
Help me.
Capitalism is unchecked. It's wild. Like, it's out here running
like,
the streets.
I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, I can't believe it. And also that those are like, it truly is. Like, those are the two options. Those are the two genders, Zach.
Why? The two genders. Oh my God. Why do you have to choose either? I don't get it. I need to watch the trailer.
Because
my advice would be, if you have to make this choice, maybe reconsider what you're doing right now. Maybe you should like wait a little bit so you can maybe afford both or delay one. So I don't know. Good luck to those people. I'm not on the show.
Okay, so moving on, we're starting with an update to news that shook up the internet yesterday. Golf legend Tiger Woods is awake and responsive after undergoing surgery following a car crash on Tuesday. Woods' agent, Mark Steinberg, said he had multiple leg injuries. For context, the LA County Sheriff's Department responded to a rollover collision and extricated Woods from his SUV. Woods was then moved to a local hospital where he was in serious condition. At a press conference addressing the crash, LA County Sheriff Alex Villanueva said investigators had no evidence that Woods was impaired.
And I think the reason why we are pointing to this impairment thought here is because Tiger Woods has been involved in car accidents before due to substance issues. Casey, I know you know this about me, but most people don't know this about me, but I'm incredibly passionate about the Tiger Woods. As a mixed Black person in America, this is the second time I've said this. This week on the show, I'm really going through something. I'm like, this month saying this a lot. But, you know, I come from a big golfing family. Tiger Woods was an icon in my household. And you know what's become even more iconic in the later years of his life is his struggles with substance abuse, his inner turmoil with his own like family issues and stuff like that. So when this car accident happened, a lot of us that do follow Tiger Woods were like, oh no, is this like it was a few years ago? Is he going through another mental break again? And you know, we don't know any details, but we just hope that Tiger Woods is recovering well. As we know, he's supposedly doing well, but I do not expect to see him on a golf course anytime soon.
Yeah. I mean, this is tough. Like what you're saying is just like Tiger Woods is inspirational for so many people. It's not often that you see a Black person golfing in a very white sport. So when something like this happens, it really stuns you.
Yeah. And if anyone's interested in learning more about Tiger Woods and his cultural impact, go to HBO Max and watch the recent Tiger Woods documentary that he's not in. It's complicated. It's weird. DM me if you want to talk about it, but it gives you a good like beginner's guide to why Tiger Woods is one of the greatest athletes that ever lived that we don't really talk about anymore. So as much as we used to. Meanwhile, if you've worked in any kind of service industry, you might have run into that customer. You know the ones, incredibly rude, don't tip well, all that bad stuff. Well, people are taking to a TikTok comment section to explain some ways they got back at those rude customers. Here are some of the most petty tactics we've come across. A bartender who gave back change in the smallest coins, a server who gave customers cold butter, even though room temperature butter was available, a deli worker who squishes together the cheese after she slices it so it becomes impossible to separate, and a barista who gave people decaf espresso shots. So this is your official PSA to be kind to people who are serving you as part of their jobs. Please don't be a jerk because your cheese may not be able to be separated.
These are seriously cracking me up because they're such small inconveniences, but they're just like when you work in the service industry, it's those little moments where you can mm-hmm. take control and like feel some sort of power. Yeah. And I totally support it. I used to work at a bakery, but one of the things that I feel like who are underappreciated are hostesses. I was a hostess at a restaurant, you know, and we're the first people you see. So if you bother us, oh boy, you're in for it the rest of the night. Because guess what? We talk to the servers.
Yes.
We talk to the people making your food.
I do not know why people are so rude and awful to folks that they're paying to do something for them. Because you're just like cruising for a bruise in. You piss off your hostess, she can go tell the chef to like pee in your coffee, give you something cold. I don't know. Peeing in your coffee.
Okay, that is not the same. You escalated to peeing in coffee from giving someone cold butter. Well, it's instead of room temperature. So, there's a difference, Zach.
So peeing coffee is on my mind today for a real reason. I was watching It's a Sin on HBO Max. Again, I am not being paid by HBO. Big HBO is not funding this show. I don't know why I keep bringing it up. But this is a new show on HBO Max about the AIDS epidemic in London in 1981, and a character pees in Margaret Thatcher's coffee. And it was hilarious.
It does make sense why that was on your brain. That does make me feel better, to be honest.
Because Margaret Thatcher was terrible to blue-collar people. So this makes sense.
Yes, she was.
Anyway.
All right. So moving on. One thing that we know has taken off in past years is true crime documentaries. We all love them. And one that's grabbing a lot of attention is Netflix's Crime Scene Vanishing at the Cecil Hotel. The series chronicles the disappearance and death of Elisa Lam, which took place at the notorious Cecil Hotel located on Skid Row in Los Angeles.
It's a story people have been obsessing over for years, largely due to a piece of surveillance video released after Elisa's disappearance that shows her behaving very strangely in the hotel elevator on the night she disappeared.
The last footage that we have of her was inside the elevator. That's where the case starts to go askew.
She kept looking outside the door.
Why is the elevator not going anywhere? Is someone keeping her here?
Her hand movements are very strange and erratic.
Like she's conjuring a spirit.
And spoiler alert, the series comes to a very logical conclusion that Elisa was experiencing a mental health crisis. She accidentally drowned and her body was found in one of the hotel's water tanks.
But the show is still receiving a lot of criticism. Its makers are being accused of being less interested in revealing that truth than spinning up fodder for online message boards. It also seems to reinforce negative stigmas surrounding mental health.
To discuss everything we're trying to grapple with in this series, we're talking with Eric Gumney. For Nerdist, he wrote the piece, Mental Health Problems Aren't Unsolved Mysteries. Hi, Eric. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. All right, so there's been a lot of hype around this series. It tackles the death of a young woman, Elisa Lam, and it's a case that online sleuths have been picking at mercilessly because there's a really bizarre piece of video attached to it. So what were your thoughts going into watching this series?
Going into it, I was actually pretty blind to the whole thing. I was fairly new to true crime, kind of as a genre that wasn't something I've been watching for too long of a time. I didn't know anything about the Elisa Lam case previously from 2013. So I had no real expectations. It was honestly kind of a pandemic watch, showed up on Netflix. I was like, that seems interesting. Let's go for it. And I was drawn in by like the spookiness that they seem to be selling it as. And but once we started watching, I realized that's not at all really what the case was. I almost immediately became a little more critical and started watching it that way.
So true crime documentaries are often controversial, but usually it's because we may not agree with the conclusion they draw. But that's not the issue you take with this one. You agree that yes, she probably died of an accidental drowning during a psychotic break. But can you elaborate on the issue that did bother you the most with the documentary?
Yeah, it was really just the representation of her bipolar disorder just throughout up until maybe the last half hour, 15 minutes of this 4-hour documentary. They really sold it as a much bigger and darker mystery than it actually was. When they first discovered she was missing, they checked her hotel room and they kind of discovered that she had left bipolar medication behind. And I mean, that was the trigger for me where immediately I was like, well, that's obviously what this is. To some extent, you can't just ignore that. And it also was kind of a conclusion they reached later on. But for 3.5 hours, they talked about anything but that. And they really drew in a lot of conspiracy theories. And like you said, the web sleuths who were picking it apart and, you know, screaming about cover-ups and looking for anything other than what ended up being the actual reason for her disappearance and her drowning. And that video of the elevator, that was another one where I think that's what drew a lot of people in. That's what kind of caused the, oh, she's being pursued. It led to other conspiracies because it was eerie. But personally, as someone who did once have a psychotic break, I knew exactly what that was the second I saw it. It was very clear that she was not operating in the same reality as, you know, she was in. She was somewhere else. And I think that was kind of obvious if you've experienced it or been around it. And the fact that the documentary kind of ignored that connection for as long as possible was, that just seemed egregious to me.
Right, right. Well, we'll be right back to talk more with Eric about what Netflix focused on and what they really missed in this docuseries that has everyone talking. Stay tuned. Welcome back. We're talking with Eric Gumney about the new Cecil Hotel series streaming on Netflix. So Eric, it's also kind of upsetting that they don't just demonize Elisa's mental health struggles, but they also paint the people living in the area around the hotel in Skid Row as villains and as possible suspects before fully coming clean that, yeah, they really had nothing to do with it. And, you know, full disclosure for everyone listening, I live blocks away from this hotel, and watching this, I was like, the hell? My neighborhood is okay. We're a complicated place like everywhere else, but we're all not like trying to kill young tourists right now. So Eric, what was the reason to string that storyline across all these episodes to really focus on Skid Row as like this really dangerous place for folks coming there?
And again, it seemed in a way just as one more thing to perpetuate this myth of there actually being a crime involved. It was a little frustrating because they were so close to actually being on point with this and doing a good job of discussing the systemic failures and the city and mental health issues that were at hand. But then again, like you said, they paint them all as villains all of a sudden. Like, it's just drug addicts and murderers there instead of actually having any sympathy for the residents of Skid Row. They used it as a way to excuse the hotel from really looking into Elisa Lam's disappearance or helping her. I think they even said, you know, she ran through the lobby at one point, said she was crazy and not doing well, and everyone just shrugged it off. And then the documentary seemed to use Skid Row as the excuse for that.
Yeah, and they'd like, it, just for people who haven't seen it, like, I was watching this and they're like, yeah, she may have gone and done meth and she may have done all these drugs and all the stuff. And they're like, wait, we know that she's on medication upstairs, that she is going through her own struggles personally. Why are we projecting all this imagination onto a place around you?
This isn't the first time you've seen true crime programs really reinforce some negative or harmful stigmas around mental illness. What was your issue with the Unsolved Mystery reboot?
Well, that was kind of my first step into the true crime genre, so I don't have more beyond that. I'm sure there are, though, because in at least three Unsolved Mysteries cases, Jack Wheeler, his episode, they mention he has bipolar disorder, and then they just kind of ignore it because his family doesn't want to accept that something could have happened regarding that. Ray Rivera, they very briefly dance with the possibility that he might be schizophrenic or have some other kind of undiagnosed illness. But again, his family doesn't believe it, so they just push past it. And then there was even the Lady in the Lake episode with Joanne Romaine. One night, she pulls up, she disappears and is found down a river a few days later, deceased. So, of course, they're like, well, that could have been suicide, and nobody wants to believe it, so they push past that as well. And it's just this erasure of it as a possibility? Even though, again, in the Jack Wheeler case specifically, he has been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. He is on medication for it. And then, much like the Elisa Lam case, he seems to have misplaced or lost his medication. He goes to a pharmacy to get more, and he's just acting erratically. And then he kind of disappears and is found the next morning somewhere else. And it's, from a broader scope, it's identical to Elisa Lam's case and looks pretty much like he had a manic episode or some kind of break. But Unsolved Mysteries especially just doesn't consider it. And I get sometimes, in his case especially, he was a government official at one point, and his family didn't really acknowledge it as a possibility. So Unsolved Mysteries may or may not have had their hands tied there. If the family's pushing all these other things, you don't really want to go against the family's wishes, which is actually kind of the other problem I had with the Cecil Hotel documentary. Her family clearly knew what it was. They had reached the conclusion, her family, the police, a psychoanalyst, they all kind of came to the conclusion that it was a break because of her bipolar disorder. And then the documentary just really ignored that and pushed all these other things, even though this particular case had been solved. And so that's, I think, it's a general issue where no one really wants to address mental health issues when, I guess, you could talk about ghosts or Russian boogeymen or whatever you're getting into with it.
It seems like television, especially, is obsessed with trying to make these stories as sexy as possible to get people to watch. And for me, it's really frustrating to see this happen because the reality of what these people are going through is incredibly sad, and we should be talking about this. And I know you mentioned at the top of the show that you've experienced your own psychotic break and had your own experiences in this space. But so do you think in television, like, what's the best route for us telling these stories? Should we like really let these things end, or like, what's the best route for us to actually deal with mental health in really interesting cases like Elisa Lam? Because her story did captivate the world and it should be talked about, but we need to probably talk about it different. So what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just exactly, it just needs to be handled differently. Elisa Lam's case, and specifically, yeah, it was a bigger issue. It went national. I understand that the web sleuths were kind of a part of the story, but I don't think you get to relish in the nonsense that they're offering. I think that's, you just need to be more honest about it, essentially. If everyone has reached the conclusion that this was an accidental drowning and it was related to her not taking her medications, that needs to be addressed and not pushed to the side in favor of all these other things. I just think it's a matter of being honest. It's just a matter of addressing it more directly as opposed to trying to find the craziest things you can to get more ratings. You know, if you want to talk about the Cecil Hotel, historically, you can't also have a discussion of mental illness. Those are two different things. They just tried to do kind of too much, I guess. Like I said, there were moments, they had historians. It was very close to being a good look at mental illness and how it could cause a disappearance. But they really just tried to make it sexier. They added all the other things and really played up the mystery when at this point it wasn't one anymore.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for your thoughtfulness here and walking us through the series that we do hope people bring more awareness to as they consume it on Netflix.
Yeah, thank you.
That's it for today. Join us tomorrow for a chat about gender reveal parties with the woman who created them.
And remember, marriage and mortgage are two genders according to Netflix and capitalism.
Be sure to subscribe to BuzzFeed Daily on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you go for your sound stories.
And please take the time to leave us a rating and a review. It helps us figure out what you like about the show versus what you love about the show. And remember to come back for more of what you love about BuzzFeed, coming to you daily.